Welcome to all of you out there. It's the boys from Rotosaurus, and we're back, and we're bringing you the High Stakes Heat. Coming at you from my office of my less-than-palatial North Royalton, Ohio estate. I am Jake Hallisker at the Dust Mite on Twitter. Alongside me, at Run D McD on Twitter, is the always efficacious Dave McDonald. Dave, how you doing?
Doing good, Jake. How we doing over there?
All right.
How was your 4th of July?
A little boring.
Yeah, that's...
First year in my
about normal, right,
my oldest
days.
Son's life that we didn't see any fireworks other than the ones that we can kind of see over the tops of the trees from his bedroom window. I am the lame parent that doesn't shoot off fireworks for my kids. What did you do?
It was definitely a lame year for me too. Normally we go to my buddy Matt's house, whose parents live. Their backyard opens up into basically this big park where the fireworks are held in Westlake here. And we can watch the fireworks from his parents' backyard, which is pretty awesome. But obviously, they have a huge family, so it was normally like 150 people there. And obviously, that's a no-go for this time of the year. So
yeah, and knowing that family, everybody would have been all over each other anybody anyway.
There's a little drinking goes on at that party. A little bit, though.
And that is Matt, the designer of our nice
the
logo
designer
for our
of
podcast.
Our logo.
Yep. And our forthcoming new Rotosaurus.com logo, which will be hopefully unveiled within the next week or so.
Yeah, it should be about then. So anyways, I just went over to my friend Bob's parents, had a little get-together, and, you know, we wore the masks and everything. So
all right.
Yeah.
Everybody follow the rules? Was it less than 10 people there? Or?
It was right around 10. So it was
So it was hopping.
Oh, yeah, it was hopping. You know Bob, so you know it was hopping.
Yeah, so, I do know Bob. If anybody else does, which you don't, it definitely was not going to be
It was
that
definitely
exciting.
Not hopping. Yeah. But, you know, it was cool to hang out and do something, because otherwise I had no plans. My parents went with their friends on a boat, so...
Oh, you weren't even with your parents.
No, No. They went on their friend's yacht.
Oh.
So, why not?
Must be nice.
Yeah, seriously, that's what I said.
Your dad didn't take his boat out? Is he still working on it?
He's perpetually working on that. Yeah. I think he's been working on that since 1984, so...
I don't think I ever saw him take it out. I just saw it sitting in the driveway.
Me neither. I mean, and I've been on it, so. He's had the same lawnmowers in that garage since 1972. I actually checked when those lawnmowers are from. And every time it breaks, every year, and every year he fixes it. I mean, good for him. He can do that.
He's religious with that stuff.
Oh, my Lord. I mean, it's nice to be able to do that.
He's very meticulous.
It's almost like, wouldn't you rather not have to do that? But as like speaking of foreign language,
it's what gets him out of the house. And
yeah, that's probably true.
So today on the show, we do have a flurry of information coming at us from summer training. This is the evening of July 5th, but, you know, just today, we've had all kinds of stuff come out.
So much happened
Even July 4th, which you don't expect to be a big news day in baseball. Man, it was just coming hot and heavy.
I know. And thankfully, I was home after the short get-together yesterday to actually keep all my Twitter followers updated on the haps.
You were definitely active last night, that's for sure.
I had to be.
Check out Dave's timeline from last night
and
from today,
today
as well. Yeah, so coming at you, we do have summer training updates, lots and lots of them, followed by a little bit of talk about drafting Josh Hader, where he goes early on in your drafts. Then we will spend the majority of the second half of the show on an article that Vlad Sedler wrote way back before the start of spring training. I believe it was before the whole start of spring training.
I think so.
Close to it, anyway. Vlad Sedler of Elite Fantasy talking about Casey Cha, a very, very high-profile NFPC player, and he's a guy that's renowned for his prowess and also for his reclusivity.
Yeah,
he's not really one that talks very much. If you see him at the draft table, he is a man of
very few words. Yes, yeah. But definitely someone that you can learn a lot from. So I tweeted out a thread today, and I highly recommend you all read it, because a lot of what he does is a lot of what we do, and I kind of feel like that's probably not on accident. But I mean,
it took us a while to get to that point.
Yeah, absolutely. But, we've honed our practices over the years for sure. And we're still honing, you know, it's never a complete process. If you think you've got everything figured out, you know, like Phil Dessau, you probably don't. A lot of times, you know, you think you have things figured out and then you have to make adjustments. And, it's a continual process of that. And you got to keep learning and keep getting better. And, the goal is to one day be as good as Casey Cha. So
right. to be a Hall of Famer, or he was supposed to be anyway a Hall of Famer this year, but we did not go to Vegas for his induction. So
I know.
Hopefully, I mean,
thanks for bringing that up again. Rubbing salt in the wound.
He'll get his just due next March.
Yeah, hopefully,
God willing. As long as we're not still,
please,
in this
God,
mess.
Please.
So let's jump right into the summer training news.
Yeah.
You know, as much as it pains me to talk about people having diseases, you know, and relay their fantasy baseball implications.
Yeah, I know.
We do have to discuss all of these COVID-19 cases, both positive diagnoses and also people that managers are not saying anything about, but we kind of know they're
implying things
that
from
it's
that.
Coming. Yeah. And also some others that, you know, we really have no idea what's going on and nobody's even made any comments that make you think about them positively having it as opposed to not. So there's a lot of guys that we have to discuss here. Quickly, I will run through all the names of the confirmed cases that we have in no particular order. We do have Scott Kingery, Salvador Perez, Miguel Sano, Freddie Freeman, Tommy Pham, Carlos Martinez, Giovanni Gallegos, Will Smith, the reliever from Atlanta, DJ LeMahieu, Willens Astudillo, and Delino DeShields Jr. Those are at least the ones that we have in our show notes. I'm pretty sure we checked it right before the show.
Yeah, I just realized I did forget to move C-Mart. I think Carlos Martinez was the one guy who I realized later that he's likely
all
right, to have it, but because they're not saying anything, but he hasn't been actually, they haven't had a positive test for him yet.
So he is not in camp as of now.
So, yeah, and you know, we don't know. You were saying might be like 3 weeks of before of.
Yeah, the scuttlebutt is that it's going to be 3 weeks for the starting pitchers to get back to a point where, you know, people are comfortable pushing them past, you know,
right,
2 or 3 innings.
Remember, these guys aren't, you know, going to be able to be ready to go once they come back, too, so they're going to have to ramp up.
Right,
you know,
it's not like they're working with their coaches because nobody can be around
them. They can't be around people. So, you know, just keep in mind that, you know, even though these guys will be back, so you're like, well, whatever, they might miss a week or two, but that's only part of the problem. The other part of the problem is then they have to ramp up, and then they have to, you know, you're coming in cold pretty much. So I know I'm kind of known as someone who's pretty conservative when it comes to avoiding risk, but I feel like in this case, if there's someone who's comparable to these guys, I would go another route.
Yeah, and we know that these guys have to at least come up negative twice before they'll even be allowed
back
with the team,
right,
which they also have to be quarantined for their, you know, respective amount of time,
right,
based on the diagnosis when it happened. And all of these cases are, other than the Phillies guy, I think Scott Kingery was a little bit further back in the past, maybe 4 or 5 days ago. Is that right?
It sounds about right.
It was at least, they were the first ones other than Charlie Blackman that came out.
Yeah, Blackman was the first,
you know,
for sure.
We already talked about him in our last episode, so he's been a while. But all these other guys, they've come out in the last 3 days.
Right. It's been a flurry.
Yeah, and they're still coming out today.
And it's probably still
going to
be coming out for the next
more
couple
yep
days, too,
yep,
at
definitely
least.
Yeah, so all of these guys, you gotta bump down your draft boards pretty much universally.
I would.
If you even want to draft them at all. Because especially with the starting pitchers,
yeah,
you know,
I think
you don't know how long it's going to take for them.
I think especially with the starters, because, you know, relievers, it takes less time to ramp up. Hitters can probably get back in there, but starters, I'm definitely most concerned about.
Right, and we don't have any starters on this list currently, which is
no, so
good.
That's good.
We do have a couple of starters in the likely cases category, which we touched on Carlos Martinez already. We
right
just bumped him back into that category. Along with him as a starting pitcher, we have Julio Teheran, and we also have Jose Urquidy. Now,
right,
these guys, it was not definitively said that they had COVID, but the managers were being very coy about why they were not in camp.
Yeah,
so
sometimes the managers will answer questions when they ask them, hey, this guy's not in camp yet, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, you know, he's coming, don't worry. But then, like, with some of them, they're like, oh, yeah, no, I don't have a comment on that.
Right,
so,
I cannot say.
I can't say it this time. So we're pretty certain that those guys all have the vid. But it just hasn't been confirmed yet.
The vid.
The vid, yeah.
I prefer the Rona.
The Rona?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just sounds really hipster.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Are
just
you a
like
hipster
me
now?
Yeah, totally.
You do like PBR.
I do. I liked it before it was hipster.
We just need
though
to get some black rim glasses.
My dad drank a lot of crappy beer growing up, so that was one of them. So I just...
Did you drink
just,
them with him or something?
No, I just... For some reason, they remind me of my dad, and I like that they remind me of my dad. I have
really?
No idea.
That's
why.
Kind of surprising.
Yeah, I know.
Just kidding, Mr. Alisker.
Yeah, I'm sure he's listening.
No, he's not.
Okay. Also on that, you know, the coy list.
The likely to have.
Yes.
the Rona.
We have Jordan Alvarez of the Astros, and just came out before the show, Kenley Jansen as well.
Yeah, that one hurts.
Yeah, that's a guy that we're both very much on.
Yeah,
as one of the few closers, you know, in our not the first tier of closers, but we like to target guys in that second tier for sure that we feel really comfortable
I like
about.
To target value, and yeah. For me, he was a guy who was a potential...
It's where it seems to be this year and last year, too.
You know, with his velocity backup, he could easily be a top three closer again, and I think I had him ranked just about as such, so...
Yeah, and job security.
Yeah, he has a lot of job security.
Okay, so it's, you know, we're kind of waiting for information to come out on those guys. We would assume that, you know, we'd get some confirmation whether or not they do have it, hopefully within the next couple days.
Right.
But, you know, Urquidy we heard about, good 2.5 days ago, I think, and it's still up in the air.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it'll be out in right. pretty soon, but I would stay away from all of those guys. Assume that they have Corona, so...
That is a shame. Urquidy was another guy that I was very much interested in.
But, okay.
Okay, now possible cases. These are ones that the managers, we have, they're not in camp, but we also don't have managers being very coy about why they're not in camp. We have them saying,
well,
they're coming, like
some
you said
of them,
before.
Some of them like haven't been tested yet, or they had been in contact.
Results.
They had been in contact with people who had COVID. And like we thought Hector Neris had it,
right.
But then they came out and said that he was at the ballpark. Right. So we're pretty sure that he doesn't have it now because he wouldn't be allowed to be around the players. But, you know, we're not 100% positive on that. But we also just recently learned before this, Bubba tweeted at me and said, show me a thing saying the Phillies were talking about how just because Nola's on the COVID list doesn't mean that he has tested positive.
Yeah, and that was from a Phillies beat reporter.
Right.
It was from... A2D Radio.
I don't know. It's probably something in Philly. I'm assuming they know what they're talking about. I don't know.
Weekly Sports Talk.
Yeah. All right. Either way. So for right now, we're not moving these guys down. We're just waiting for more information. But some of them could end up with COVID. But I would just be cautious with them for now. But that would be, you know, Neris, Nola, Mike Fiers, Jose Luzardo, Yanni Chirinos.
Jesus Luzardo.
Jose Martinez and Eduardo Rodriguez. So several starters in there, too. It's kind of interesting right. that they're kind of slower with the information on the starters, it seems like, which maybe there's something to that.
And a lot of these guys are coming from other countries.
Right.
So there's also travel restrictions. I mean, right now it's hard to travel anywhere. So.
Several of them are also currently in Florida.
Okay.
You know, and Florida man's running wild down right. there. So yes. you got to stay away from him.
Yeah. Canceled my Disney World vacation.
Probably a good idea.
All right. So we're hopefully going to get information on those guys as well soon. And we know, as we've said, there's going to be a lot more coming out in the next few days.
Yeah.
Probably up until the season. I mean, these guys are still going to be around each other.
Right.
They're not in a bubble like the NBA players are. So it's more likely that some of them are going to contract something before the season starts.
Very possible.
Okay. We do have two guys that have opted out since we last talked. Previously, we had Mike Leake and Ryan Zimmerman, Joe Ross, and who's the other one? I'm blanking.
Ian Desmond,
good.
And, I mean, okay. technically Thank Tyson you. Ross, but nobody really cares
right.
about
He's
him.
He's still a free agent.
Yeah.
So David Price, that was kind of the big bombshell that we saw yesterday. A lot of implications with that one. Muddies the waters in L.A. a great deal.
Yeah, although they're saying that Stripling's already up to, you know, something like three or five. I don't know.
I think it was five innings, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, because, you know, Dave Roberts came out and said that through the first time, two times through the rotation, they're going to limit their guys to, you know, 2 to 4 innings, something like that. And
yeah.
I don't know, like, I don't know if I've been back and forth on this a lot. I don't know if I buy it or not, because why would they, I mean, I get why they're ramping up to pitch more than that, but then if they're able to go that, why would they take them out early?
I don't know. They've always been pretty conservative with that. And Walker Buehler came out and said that he's a slow starter,
right.
referring to the fact that, you know, he doesn't throw a lot of innings in the beginning of camp and, you know, beginning of the season either.
Right.
We really never know with the Dodgers. They have so many, they still, even without Price, they have, you know, 7-8 viable starting options. And nobody's, you know, Ross Stripling even came out and said, you know, when he was asked whether he was going to get that rotation spot, he said he's preparing
As if he would.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
as normal.
As he, for his normal role.
Okay.
So his normal role is, I don't know what the hell they're going to do with me.
He doesn't have normal. His normal role is that he doesn't have
They'll start me for role. 3 weeks and then throw me in the bullpen for being good.
Can know what they're doing. Yeah. So, yeah, definitely some implications there. Stripling, I think, is probably first in line. But then you've also got Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin there as well.
And there could be piggybacking with all those guys.
Could be, yeah. I wouldn't spend more than a later pick on most of those guys, you know, maybe Stripling, but I don't imagine any of them are going to be piling up the innings this year.
There's a lot of love for Stripling in the fantasy community, and rightfully so.
Right.
Which would, you know.
But he's never been that guy who's going to go six plus innings. You know, he's like a five inning guy.
Yeah, it's I still feel like he's gonna have his fans that are going to push him up a little bit.
I would say yes, but just letting people know that if you're taking him, don't, you know, be expecting to get a full starter's load out of him.
Right. You know, he could end up following. We don't know.
Right.
They, you know, like we said, they can end up bouncing him around to different roles because that's what they do. And the other one is Felix Hernandez with Atlanta. He was looking like he was going to have the fifth starter job.
I thought so. I was talking to Brian Vogel the other day, though, and he was saying that the reason that he thinks he opted out, other than the fact that, you know, he's already made his money, you know, he was kind of on the tail end of his career. I mean, not to say that he won't come back again, but he didn't have as much incentive to play this year as, like, a lot of the younger guys who haven't made their bones yet. But he thinks that he opted out as a way to save face because he thinks that he was going to lose that spot anyways, because apparently, like, the guys in the Braves organization were on the DL saying, you know, he doesn't look very good. And Kyle Wright and Sean Newcomb both looked very good in spring.
That's interesting.
So.
Yeah, Sean Newcomb, Kyle Wright, you know, Kyle Wright is out in the beginning, but he's definitely got a lot of
promise. He's an elite prospect stuff guy. I mean, he's got 96 mile an hour fastball or something like that. I mean, he's a guy you want to take a shot on. I would take a shot on him regardless late in the draft. He'll probably be jumped. There'll be someone who's in love with him who takes him, but I think it might be Newcomb over him, but I mean, I don't know. I think it just depends on how they look in summer, but it looked like in spring training, Newcomb pitched three games and started all three of them, whereas Wright pitched four games and only started two of them.
Now, the only other lefty in that pen was Will Smith, right? Will Smith is the only one.
Yeah, and so he has COVID. So
if he's delayed, you know,
that makes Newcomb sense. Yeah, they could put the Newcomb in this pen because of that. Yeah, it makes some sense.
I mean, his stuff translates excellently to the pen.
Right.
As, you know, any power pitcher does.
That's true. Either way, I would take a shot on Kyle Wright regardless.
Mm-hmm. Now, we do have to remember that the Braves were very forthright about the fact that they were going to probably ease their starters in.
That's true.
Two or three innings, the first maybe couple times.
But for where you're taking Kyle Wright,
he's not going to be last third of the draft.
He's not a guy that's you're going to be counting on for bulk. You know, he's going to be a spot stream starter. You know, so
yeah, that's one of those upside plays that we like to make.
Yeah,
and especially with starters, you don't want to take a bunch of, you know, guys that you're going to be reluctant to start. You want to get somebody that could pop in that last third of the draft. So that's good. Okay, so those are our two opt-outs.
Yeah.
Masahiro Tanaka was unfortunately hit in the head by a liner. I think it was from Stanton.
It was Stanton, yeah.
Okay. He was taken to the hospital, but he's been since released as of last night.
Mm-hmm.
And he is in concussion protocol. They're saying he has a mild concussion. He's acting like his normal self. So one would, you know, assume that he's going to be throwing again within maybe a week.
Yeah.
We'll see what that
sounds
does.
Sounds about right. Hopefully he's okay.
We're not changing his valuation at all,
I'm not. Yeah. I mean, he might be slightly behind because of it. It just depends. But I think he's going to be one of those guys that drops anyways. I think he's not someone who people are apt to push up.
He has some stigmas, that's for sure.
He's not exciting. Like, there's not a lot of people who are like, oh, man, Tanaka's in for a huge year. You know, I mean, there's some things that I like about him. But
the way that he came out against the ball last year and how it was affecting, you know, his split. And the fact that we kind of assume that the ball's going to be the same this year.
The juice ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the other thing I'm waiting to see about. I haven't heard anything on it.
Yeah. I don't think we are going to hear anything. It's going to be a lot of noise. I think we're going to, because there's not going to be a lot of games.
Yeah.
And they're probably not all using the game balls in summer training
either. It's weird. So. I have no idea what they're going to do with that.
One would, you know, this is all conjecture, obviously.
It is.
But
we don't know
anything. One would think that Major League Baseball would need to keep those balls
in
the game.
Yeah.
To get the offense flowing, bring everybody back.
Right.
We have had some new arrivals for some players and their wives. Garrett Cole and Byron Buxton's wives had their babies, which would give them plenty of time to be at home and, you know, self-quarantine if they wanted to with their newborns and then come back. Are we changing Garrett Cole's valuation? Buxton, we're probably leaving about the same. Garrett Cole, is that changing it for you?
No, I don't think so for either of them. It seems like they're both coming to camp and it's like business as usual for them. Because we also had Mike Trout who had a kid, but right. He's been the opposite. He's been very much like him and Han over.
Yeah, he's wavering.
Possibly sitting out the season. I think with Garrett Cole, that massive contract being the first year, I don't think he's thinking he can opt out this year.
Right. I mean, he's got a lot of expectations.
He does, yeah. I mean, not that Trout doesn't, but it's just a different situation. I'm not changing Cole and Buxton's value right now, but the one who I am would be Zach Wheeler, because, you know, his wife hasn't given birth yet, but she's due early on in the season, and it seems like sounds like he's going to be missing a couple weeks, and then
couple starts for sure.
Easily, at least, yeah. because then, you know, even once he's ready to go, then he has to ramp up.
He's another one that's noncommittal about what he's going
to
do.
Right, and he could easily decide to be like Trout if, you know, where he's thinking it's too big of a risk to bother with it this season, especially having already missed. You know, if he misses a couple starts, that's a sixth of the season right there.
Right.
Which is another unfortunate one because we liked Wheeler a lot too.
Yeah, we did. We were, you know, it seemed like we were kind of in the minority on that one this year. But
I just listened to Nick Pollock talk about how much he likes him. Okay, I think there's some other people who I've heard. But, yeah, he wasn't someone that I was worried that I'd have to push way right. up.
Yeah.
But.
We did discuss Mike Trout kind of hemming and hawing. We also have Buster Posey. They're both in camp. They're
right.
both participating with their teammates, but they're very much noncommittal. And
from what I'm seeing from Posey, it's looking like he's going to opt out.
Yeah, we're reading the tea leaves, and it really sounds like he's just waiting for the right time to drop that bomb.
Yeah, and I don't know if that means it's Joey Bart time. I would not assume that he would get full time, but I would take a shot on him. You know, it's another guy late that could be an impact player, especially at a position like catcher, where you don't have a lot of impact guys.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
why
if you're
not?
Drafting late catchers, the chances you're going to drop them is at least, you know, 60% anyway. So
yeah, I mean, draft them, and you know, you can always drop him after the first week or two if he's not getting any looks. So
okay. Nationals manager Davey Martinez did come out and say that Carter Kieboom was the starting third baseman for now.
For now.
That was, you know, very direct, of course. For now being in quotes. And we do have – now Ryan Zimmerman is out.
Right.
We know. But Asdrubal Cabrera is still kicking around.
And he'll get at-bats. Yeah. I mean, there's no way around it. Asdrubal's going to get some at-bats. But I think this is probably – he doesn't want to commit himself to Kieboom, who really struggled last year, you know, because he's a young guy. He could easily struggle again, but I think they want him to run with the job. So I think he's interesting.
Sure.
It just depends on where he goes. He's not like a target for me, but, you know, it's an upside play.
Right, and is he shortstop eligible? I'm really bad at this year.
Think
I'm
so.
I'm so out of this year. Okay, so we'll just keep him as first or third base eligible for now.
Yeah, I would just worry about his third base eligibility for now, but I'm not sure if he has.
Oh, he is shortstop
eligible.
Yeah,
too.
So
okay,
that brings me to the topic of gaining eligibility this year. So the NFBC's rules now have been amended to the fact that it will take 4 games at a position in season for a player to gain eligibility. So, you know, that makes him a little bit more interesting, that if you can pop him at middle infield or corner infield, if he does get, you know, those 4 games and looks like he's performing, that might bump his value up just a hair.
Yeah,
there are a lot of third base options and a lot of shortstop options, but, you know, good middle infield options are not easy to find.
No, and so there's upside with this one, you know, whereas a lot of those guys going around there are the kind of guys who, you know, not necessarily going to give you a whole lot. Where is he going right now? It's like three.
Well, this is mid-June until now. There's only been 10 drafts in the NFBC, but he is going at an ADP of 396.
Yeah, I mean, so I think that's probably going to be up from there.
Yeah, not with this news, that's going to bump up.
Yeah,
yeah. Most of these drafts have happened before those.
Yeah, know, I wouldn't. I wouldn't go nuts on Keboom, but it's just someone to keep in mind as a potential option there.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. He's an interesting guy. Also came out today, the Mets, gosh, now I'm showing my lack of preparedness. Who is the Mets new manager again? The new
Luis Rojas?
Luis Rojas. Great, right. Thank you. Okay, he came out saying that they may use a committee to close, which is going to affect the way that we view Edwin Diaz.
For sure. I had him as a top six closer, and I'm going to have to move him down now. The main thing is in... my boy Rocco on Twitter, you know, he was telling me it sounded kind of like coach speak, like not, he doesn't really think that maybe it means anything. And it's possible, but my thing is, it's a new manager, and anytime a new manager doesn't endorse a closer, that's troublesome in my opinion. I certainly think he's going to get saves. It's not a question of that, but he kind of goes into that category where with Gallegos, who has COVID now too, you know, Nick Anderson, Josh Hader, all those guys who they've got great skills, but we don't know what their role is exactly because they could be used all over the place. We're just not sure that they're going to be the full-time closers. Taylor Rogers is another guy. So yeah, with Diaz, I'm going to be moving him down several tiers, unfortunately, which is a shame because I was a fan of
the stuff.
I mean, it was him and Jansen in that area, you know, and mm-hmm. I liked both a lot. And I'm glad that Neris looks like he's okay because if he was gone too, I don't know what I'd have to really change my, my targets.
That would be a big gap between the other guys that we liked.
It would be.
So does this bump, you know, Seth Lugo up for you at all?
For me, Lugo, I think he might get a couple saves, but he's a multi-inning guy. I mean, this is a guy who can start too, so I'm expecting them to kind of use him as a swingman, but also as a multi-inning reliever. I don't expect him to ever be a primary closer. I think, if anybody, it's Betances, but the problem with Betances is in the spring, his velo was still way down. Yeah. So
we have to see him perform.
We have to see him. I mean, I don't know if we're going to be able to see their velocities in summer training, but he would be the guy, if anybody, to take saves away from Diaz, I would think.
He's coming off major injuries. There's a lot of question marks with Betances.
There are.
You know, he's on a show-me deal, right? He's on a one-year show-me deal.
I believe so, yeah.
So one would think that he would be motivated to earn some money for next year, but, you know, that's all dependent on his health.
Right.
Okay, well, that's the majority of the summer training notes that have come out in the last few days.
Yeah, so it's going to be messy, and I see everybody talking on Twitter about, you know, oh, well, I'm just going to ignore all this stuff, and
It is overwhelming.
It is overwhelming, I get that, but what I always say is I like messy situations because it gives me an edge, because I put the work in to educate myself on everything and then make the best decisions possible. So I want messy because the more people who say, yeah, fuck it, I don't care, I'm just not even going to bother with it. I have heard people saying, well, they're all on the same playing field. They're not. Everybody is going to approach things differently, and it's on you to figure out who has the best chance of approaching it in a way that you can take advantage. You want to find those closers who are going to be the everyday closers, because there will be those guys. And, I mean, this applies to all positions and everything. Like with the starters when you were talking earlier, you want to find those starters whose teams are going to push them right out the gates. You don't want the guys who are going to be limited at first. You want to have an edge in innings and strikeouts, you know, and the way to do that is to find the teams that and the players, the individuals. And I heard Nick Pollock talking about this, and he was saying exactly what I was thinking, where you want those guys who you know that they're going to be like, no, you're not taking me out after five innings. You know, guys like Trevor Bauer, you know, his efficiency might get him out early, but there's a lot of guys like Scherzer, Verlander, assuming they're healthy, Bieber, you know, Clevinger. These guys are going to want to stay in as long as possible. Strasburg, you know, they're not going to be limited. So find those edges in messy situations.
Yeah, there's reasons that, you know, certain fantasy baseball players are at the top every year.
Right.
And people are people that say that this is going to be a year of luck, you know, they're right to a degree. But as you said, this information is out there.
Yep.
It's there for everybody to consume. We know where to find it, you know, for the most part.
Right.
You just got to do a lot more digging than usual, and also a lot more, you have to be a lot more organized than usual, because there's just so much.
Well, that doesn't bode well for you.
No. Well,
luckily you have me.
I mean, I have more time than usual this summer, at least.
So that's true. But organized is not a word I would ever describe you as.
Yeah, you do keep me in line in terms of putting it all in one place. I like to think that I can remember everything.
Yeah, so Jake's got like a borderline, what is it called? You know, where he can recall everything. His memory is really, really good. Because on Twitter, for example, when I like something, it's because I saved it so I can go back and look at it again. Like, I know some people just like everything. Like, you comment something and they'll like it. I don't do that because I can't remember everything like Jake. So I like something and then I go back, look at all the things that I liked, and then enter it into my, like, notes, basically. Yeah. Whereas Jake just kind of says, oh, yeah, I'll remember that.
I'm very much a seat of my pants kind of guy.
Yeah, you are.
Sometimes a little more than I should be, but...
All the time more than you should be. You mean... I've come in to help him on drafts before, and he doesn't even realize, like, his picks up. Like, he's off running around with the kids and the dog, and he's like, you know... Then he gets upset when he misses something, and
this is
like,
why I don't do online drafts.
Yeah.
This is why I like live drafts, because I have nothing else bothering me.
Yeah.
It's very hard, you know, even for this podcast, it's very hard to close the door and not worry about anything that's going on the other side of it. I have a very hard time shutting it off. Yeah, even in a main event draft online, the 2 years that my kids were being born, I stayed home from Vegas, and those online drafts are a real pain in the butt for
me.
He
cannot focus at all. I don't know how he can't focus, because that's all like when I'm in the draft, I'm like always super focused because I have to be, and he's just like, whatever.
Doing my fab on the softball bench.
Oh my god.
It's
Jesus.
I am pretty bad.
How do you ever win anything?
Yeah. It's a very good question.
Well, I mean, how much have you blown because of that, though, too?
Not that much.
Okay.
Net, not that much.
Okay. All right. All right. So, you know, I've been talking to people lately about Josh Hader. You know, a lot of, obviously a talking point, because I had him ranked so low in my closer rankings. The reason that he's ranked as low as he is isn't because he's not great. We get it. It's because I can't count on his saves. The Brewers are one of those teams who like to use guys in that fireman role. They like that. We can bring Hader in the sixth or seventh or eighth if necessary, and they want to be able to use him for multiple innings. Now, will they use him in the eighth and ninth a bunch? Yeah, I'm sure they will. And actually, Council came out and said, we're not going to use him in back-to-back outings very much, especially if he goes multiple innings in one outing. So, you know, it's just something to keep in mind. Obviously, what that means is if you're not using him in back-to-back games, he's not the full-time closer. We pretty much should know that by now, but a lot of people still think that Hader is, like, the number one ranked closer and all this stuff, because they're like, well, we'll get some saves out of him. In addition, we'll also get some wins. But the thing is that people never really think about is, okay, how are you constructing your roster based around that? If you're drafting Josh Hader, you have to take two closers, right?
Yeah. Definitely.
I mean, because
if not a third.
Right. So that means that you have two closers plus Hader in the bullpen altogether, in your rotation. So in addition to your starters. So when you have Hader in there, you're going to get a few extra saves, but you're going to be probably lacking in wins. And these people who think he's going to go nuts in wins, you're crazy. He's going to have like 2 to 3 wins this year. I mean, it's not going to be a lot. You cannot ever bank on wins from anybody, especially not a reliever. It's just you just can't. I mean, it's volatile and by nature. And so if you're hoping to get a bunch of wins out of him, you're going to be mistaken. And the thing is, for where you take him, you're taking him basically, you're using him instead of an ace, because you're like, well, I'm going to get these elite ratios out of him, and then I'll get whatever I get in wins and saves, cool. But you're taking him over guys like Morton, Paddock, Nola, Darvish, Greinke, and Glasnow, who all go around there. Now, some of those will probably end up getting pushed up much further, and I think that's...
We've seen Morton be pushed up quite a bit
that's
these
true.
Last
that's
few
true.
Drafts.
And
he
so
was mid-third round in a couple of them, I believe.
Yeah. And so, you know, I get that argument. People are going to say, well, by the time all those guys get pushed up, he'll be better than the pitchers left at that point. Then I would go hitter, because if all those pitchers are getting pushed up, that means some pretty damn good hitters are dropping to that point. And I just don't see a roster construction that I love with Hader in it.
Now, does the news with Corey Knebel not being possibly ready for the start of the season, does that change your tune at all?
A little bit, you know, because the
Brewers. Who else do they have?
Right. I mean, yeah.
You know, you got Freddie Peralta and Corbin Burns. They're intriguing, but they're also extremely inconsistent.
And someone made the argument, which I thought was good, that, you know, Peralta and Burns, if they keep them in the bullpen, they won't need to use Hader in a multi-inning role as much, because those two can. Mm-hmm. I just don't know how much the Brewers trust those two, because they're more starters than relievers. You can use them as relievers, and I think that they can. Burns especially is elite stuff. They both do. I just don't know what the trust level is there. I mean, in a high leverage situation where you need a win, are you going to trust them over Hader? I don't know. It's a tough situation, and I'm fully admitting that I don't know how to value Hader exactly. And in those situations, I just kind of like to go with what I'm comfortable with, and that's not
that early Hader. In the draft. There's a number of guys.
That's the thing. More it's with. You know, in the Hader truthers take him in the third. You know, like I think half the mains he's going to go in the third, and the other half will go in the fourth. So, you know, it's not like you're getting a value on him, and I would just rather take a guy like Osuna a little bit later and get those guaranteed saves and still get great ratios. So yeah,
he is very rock steady.
You know, and you got
and you know Yates. He's in the ninth inning.
Right.
They're not using him
anymore. No, and they don't have to because they've got guys like Presley who they can bring in, you know, earlier. They got tons of stuff, you know, Davinsky and everybody else there. But, yeah, there's no worry with Osuna not being the guy in the ninth, whereas with Hader there is. And for me, that's how I rank my closers. It's about the role. It's not about – it's more about the role than it is about the skills. Right. So it's no not disrespecting his skills whatsoever. We know he's great. It's just that I'd rather go a different direction.
This is the way you have to approach that position.
Right.
Because, I mean, there's so much volatility to begin with. Why increase the volatility by taking somebody that you're not sure they have a guaranteed role?
But, like let's say you have him in, and you've got two closers plus Hader, and let's say that they're all getting you, the two closers are getting you a bunch of saves, and Hader's also getting you some saves. But let's say your team is deficient in wins. Now you have to bench one of your three closers or one of your two closers or Hader in order to put in extra starters to get those wins.
Right.
So now you're like wasting, those are like wasted picks because you're sitting them on your bench.
Yeah, and you're probably just a little bit behind on strikeouts too, despite the fact that Hader's, you know, K per nine is very high.
Right.
That's still not, you know, altogether when you have three relievers in your lineup, it's not going to equal two relievers and a starter, most likely.
Not likely. And I think there's going to be so much starting pitching streaming this year that you're going to want to keep getting guys in there because there's going to be a lot of matchups to take advantage of, I think. And, so that's kind of how I feel about that.
Makes perfect sense. So we are not Josh Hader guys. Sorry, Josh Hader truthers. Where did you have him ranked again? 17?
I mean, I don't know where he's going to be
now. That's going to probably change a little bit.
Yeah, he'll be up a little bit, but and with the Knebel news and all that, but he's still going to be up behind all the guys who I feel comfortable with, that they have the role, basically.
Right. Which is dwindling.
It doesn't really matter, right? Like, I could have him 17th or I could have him 5th. It's the same freaking difference because I'm not going to get him.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, would you like to introduce Vlad's article here? Now, Casey Cha, I'll take it. Casey Cha is an extremely well-renowned player in NFBC
circles. Yeah, you went over that.
Circles.
Tell him his accomplishments.
He is, he was going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame this year for the NFBC. He, especially in these last few years, is extremely proficient, winning tons of 15-team league titles. In the last seven seasons, he's won a total of 35 NFBC league titles. Now, that's 15-team and 12-team league, but last year alone, that's 2019, I should say, he won 14 15-team league titles.
14!
Which is nuts. I mean, and three of those were main events.
He won!
One of them was the Platinum League.
The Platinum League, by the way, is the highest...
it was a $15,000 entry, I believe, last year.
Yeah, I think so.
So he won $120,000 from winning the Platinum
League. So these are like the best of the... Well, I'm not going to say the best of the best, but really, really, really good players with a lot of money.
Watch it now. if they're listening, watch it.
Well, I mean,
you might have some egos hurt with that one.
No, I'm not saying they're not. I'm not just not saying it's not necessarily like the 15 best. It's just
disposable income doesn't make you the best player.
Well, I remember that year Rich Gannon joined us, and he didn't.
Yeah, that's and Meatloaf played too way back when.
Oh,
apparently, Jesus, really? By all accounts, he was a huge dick, and nobody liked him at all.
I just remember Sean Spencer from Psych also played that one year.
Yeah,
he was in my league, and he boned me. He
by doing what?
He drafted nothing but stolen base guys and starting pitchers. Like literally through the first 15 rounds, that was every single player. So we all had to jump up starters and steals guys way up. And it screwed everybody in the
league.
You're
saying you can't win an overall title like that?
It was really, really difficult. Even if I knew that was coming, I don't know if I could have.
You know, I think we've made it pretty clear that Casey Cha is one of the best of the best.
Yes.
He's one of the most mild-mannered guys at the draft table. Very, very quiet, very unassuming. But, you know, back in the spring, he opened up to Vlad Sedler of Guru Elite. Who put together a very extensive interview where, surprisingly, you know, Mr. Cha laid out quite a bit of his, you know, overall strategy.
Yeah, and
a lot of it, you know, rings true with what we do.
Exactly.
Not to pat ourselves on the back, but...
Well, I just think, like, if you've done this for long enough, you kind of pick up how to do it. Until I read that interview, I never knew anything about his process whatsoever. I didn't know anything about.
He's not forthcoming.
I didn't know about. Well, I don't know. Most of the people who play NFBC at the level that we play at are very secretive about it. I mean, this year with Twitter, where I've been all over Twitter, this is the first time. Like, and when I released my closer rankings, people were like going nuts over it because they're like, "Holy shit, you're putting this out there!" And you know, Gecko's been lording it over me every day, pretty much. He
doesn't miss an opportunity to troll.
No, he does not. But that's the thing. Like, usually people at our level aren't putting this stuff out, and so we don't know what their process is. We just know what works for us. And so it was really cool to read this and see just how much we have in common with his process. You know, a big thing that he does is he targets post-hype players, you know, coming off a down year. So
every year there's a few of those guys that pop off.
Like, I always tell people, don't take guys coming off a career year or guys who finally were able to stay healthy, like a Jorge Soler or a Steven Strasburg. Now,
Pete Alonso.
This is Pete Alonso. This is assuming we're talking about a full season here. Now, I am still targeting Strasburg because I'm not as concerned about the innings that he piled up last year because it's only going to be 60 games. But in a longer season, I would be concerned because you have to draft him at his high water mark, you know, and it's the same thing with Soler. So you don't want to find last year's great player. You want to find the next year's great player. And, you know, that's how we approach the draft too. So that's a big thing for Casey Cha. And then with his draft prep, you know, he mainly uses Fangraphs, he says, to evaluate player stats, and he only uses StatCast as like a tiebreaker. If he's like kind of between two guys, he'll look at the StatCast, you know, measurables, the difference between guys.
Max exit velocity. There's a lot of stuff put into launch angle and exit velocity.
But that's the thing. Like a lot of the people who haven't played at this level before, they think that like you have to know all the stat. Like they think that StatCast is the be all end all. And I keep trying to tell people like, it's not that it's not, it's a piece of the puzzle. It's useful, but it you should not make your rankings just based on StatCast info. Like, that is not what makes you a good fantasy player. It's just one piece of the puzzle. And for Casey, it's barely a part of the puzzle. I mean,
that is very shocking to hear.
I mean, I don't know. Like, StatCast has only been a thing for a couple years now. So
he's been good before that.
Yeah, right. That's true. But he's also been good since StatCast.
So he knows his process already prior to StatCast being around. So that makes sense.
But he really looks into like all the information that's out there in terms of I don't know if narrative is the right word, but he wants to hear what the coaches are saying and the GMs are saying and stuff like that.
That term's got a stigma these days. There narrative? Is something to it to a degree.
No, there is,
especially in baseball where the manager, baseball, football, whatever, where the managers don't tell you the truth pretty much ever.
Right.
You have to be intuitive with these things.
I always tell people, anytime you see a headline, go and read the actual article. Like, read the actual words, and you can tell so much. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is, people are like, well, we don't know who's closing in Seattle. And it's like, I read what Scott Servais said, and it very clearly points to Hirano as the guy that he's going to start as the closer. I mean, if you read what he said, he's talking about he wants that veteran leadership, and then eventually later he expects a young guy to come and take it over, like Matt McGill or Austin Adams, who I actually really like. Mm-hmm. But bottom line is I fully expect Hirano to have the job because, you know, I know how Cervais feels about it because I read his words. So, you know, Casey Chow was talking about, you know, he likes to listen to what the coaches and the GM say. People changing their approaches or their batting stance, their pitch mix, if they're adding a pitch. All of these things are all things that I have a whole document that I collect all this information on so that I keep everything in front of me. And I just kind of take it as I don't put too much stock in any one thing, but they all kind of add up to something. You know, the spring training stats that we went over with the last episode, camp battles, injuries obviously is a big thing too. You know, he was talking about that. And he actually said he does evaluations on about 1,000 players, and then he attempts to eliminate over 80% of those players. So basically, he wants to get his player pool down to under 200 players that he drafts from. And, you know, I know that a lot of people think that, you know, on Twitter, they think I think that everything's too risky or I'm overly cautious, but it's good to see another guy who does what I do. Like, I'm looking for reasons to cross someone off my list, because that means that two guys who are going at the same time, I have a reason for taking one over the other. And a lot of times there's just guys I don't want to take a risk with. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like I do something similar. You know, it's not by accident that I tend to want to draft a lot of the same guys in the same areas. It's because we've done months of research, extensive research. You know, we've done, not that we do a bunch of mock drafts, because, you know, that's kind of going out of style these days. But
no, I haven't done mock draft in years.
But, you know, we've put so much into this that we are going to focus on guys that we really, truly believe in those certain areas. And
right.
You know, you don't do draft champions. I do a few usually as kind of like, you know, my ramp up to the season kind of thing. So I'm not putting as much thought into them. It's more me learning the player pool. But that is a big step for me in paring down who I'm interested in.
Right.
You know, because you have so much time between those picks that you really could put a lot of work into a lot of those guys. And you know, even if it's a cursory overview, you know, it leads you to do more research into those guys that, you know, where something stands out to you. So
it's something that
I'm doing from December on.
I see a lot of people, though, where when they're just trying to decide between, like, their rankings, they're looking at little things on StatCast and going like, oh, well, this guy's hard hit rate is, you know, 0.7 higher than this guy. It's like, okay, but he also had, like, a broken arm that he never got fixed.
Or he's hitting eighth like Miguel Sano.
Yeah, it's like people ignore the things outside of the stats, and you can't do that if you want to be good at this.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's so much out there now that it's, you know, it's flooding everybody's minds, and you really do have to be strong and wade through it all and look at what, you know, not that StatCast doesn't matter. We're not saying it doesn't matter.
No.
But it is, it's a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
It is, you know, 10-15% of what you should be looking at.
Right.
There's so much more out there that goes into it.
And, you know, another thing he was saying is he uses ADP to find inefficiencies on players. Basically, just kind of looking for the guys who he thinks are undervalued or overvalued so that he can cross them off his list. And he also doesn't do projections like we don't either.
That,
you know,
that warms my heart, that's for sure.
I know, yeah. It's everybody's talking about doing their own projections, and I've got them for this many innings and this many at-bats, and I just don't see the point. I just don't. I mean, I can do it in my head where I'm like, okay, he's hitting here in the lineup. He's got full-time at-bats compared to this guy who's going to play, you know, 3 out of 5 games or whatever. But I don't need to do a projection on it. You know, it's all in there.
Right. When you do as much work as we do, and we you know, you analyze every player pretty much, you kind of have an idea of what the range of outcomes is.
Right.
You want to look at that range of outcomes and say, does this work for my team for what I need at this point?
Exactly. But also consider the upside and the downside.
Right. Exactly.
Like, here's what he could give me, and yeah, everything's on a spectrum. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, he's also saying he looks for those under-the-radar guys who can take a big leap in production. You know, like, like we say, after the first 10 rounds or so, you want to be looking for those high upside guys. You don't want to be taking the big risks in the first 10 rounds. But after that, take your shots. You know, if you think a guy has all the stuff to put together to become an ace, you know, like I did with Bieber last year, although that was like round eight, but oh man, I wasn't going to mention him. God damn it. God, I'm going to catch shit for that. All right. But I mean, my point is you find guys that you think can, you know, go from being an eighth round pick to a potential first or second round pick the next year. That's what you want to look for. Just don't go for the guys who are being held together with duct tape. That's what I'm saying. And then he was also talking about working backwards to map out a draft plan, which we also do for sure. Know, where you're looking at the end of the draft and being like, okay, where's the value at the end of the draft that I don't have to worry about taking early on because I really like the guys later, you know? And he gave the
example.
And
if I feel like I have to jump them, okay, I'll jump them to the 24th round instead of the 26th round. Yeah, guys that you know that you can get at the, you know, 80% of the time.
Right. And, you know, he's like, if I like a few shortstops late, then I can fade that position early in the draft and, you know, kind of count on getting those guys later.
Very pertinent this year.
It is. It is very pertinent this year. You know, and when you're... I always say, like, when I'm looking at the who's going where, I'm looking at do I like hitters or pitchers going in this section more? And because there's some areas where I'm drafting, I don't like any of the pitchers. So I'm like, okay, I don't want to be in a position, put myself in a position where I need to get a pitcher there if I really like the hitters. So you just want to always be focused on building your team where you can take the players that where you see the value in them at those positions in the draft. You know, and as you said, it's imperative to know what players you like and can target late, so that it helps you build a pool of players that you want to choose from at early picks.
So, yeah, that I know that's something that I do.
Yeah, it's something I do too.
You know, I certainly have my guys in rounds 15 and beyond that I focus on, and that kind of helps me plan how I want to start. You know, do I want to make sure I get, you know, Jose Ramirez to make sure I get some steals at middle or at third because I might want to take a, you know, a guy that's a middle infielder like Tommy La Stella, you know, what, for example, that isn't going to steal me any bags. Just to make up for the fact that I can't get steals from that middle infield spot. Do you map out a certain amount of your draft in the beginning when you enter into a big draft?
I do. So obviously, you know, the deeper into the draft you go, ADP matters less and less. But it's still a good guideline through at least the first, I would say close to the first 20 rounds. It's a good guide. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can, once you get to that round 20 area, then it's kind of a free-for-all. But up until that point, you should be using ADP. It doesn't, but that doesn't mean that, like, you should go by it, but you should use it as a guide.
And you got to know where everybody goes so that you don't, you know,
exactly.
Miss.
And I was going to say, bringing me to this point, have multiple targets at each pick so that you have a backup plan. So if all your guys get sniped at that pick, you can go to the next guy down. But like, let's say all your guys, like you've got three guys on your board and they go boom, boom, boom right before you. And now your next guy doesn't go for that you want, doesn't go for, you know, maybe another round or two.
Oh, well.
Right. See, that's the thing. One of the things that I love that he said was take your guys, you know, don't take the guy who looks like a value who fell because it makes you feel warm and fuzzy that you got the ADP 130 guy at pick one, you know, 190. Don't worry about that. If he wasn't a guy that you think is really worth that spot, don't let it influence you on ADP.
Because he probably doesn't fit your plan anyway.
He probably doesn't fit your plan, and also there might be a reason he's falling. Yeah. And or people let the public perception influence them too much, where you think that you have to take this player at a higher ADP over other guys. So it's one of the things that actually always concerns me every year drafting with Tony, because Tony is one of those people who starts getting jittery when a guy's falling. He's like, oh, maybe we should take him. And I'm like, no, I don't. I still would rather have this guy. And he's like, well, we can get him later. And then he ends up going before we can get him. So, you know, and the other thing is maybe you have like three guys going at the same time that you want. So how do you approach that? Well, you can take them in three consecutive rounds. You just have to take two of them way earlier. But if you are that convinced on those guys, do it. Don't take a guy just because he's a falling value.
Yeah, I feel like we've had a couple. I don't know. I feel like 2 years ago you had that happen to you with one guy and you regretted.
I mean, Donaldson?
Donaldson.
Yeah,
that's right, 18.
That was, yeah, 18. Ugh. So, yeah, Josh Donaldson fell, and he was no way in part of my plans, and we felt like, ah, it's such good value, you got to take him, and he was hurt.
Yeah.
And that pretty much wrecked my, I think I ended up in second, and that ruined my chances to win because it was like my third round pick, I think. Mm-hmm. I had to then alter the rest of my draft because he was not the type of player I was going to take there. So now I have to change my whole draft strategy because I decided to take this guy who fell to me. You know, I'm just saying, if you're going to do that, take a guy who's a falling value, make sure it's a guy that you like. Like when Juan Soto fell to us last year in the third, that was a guy who we were really high on. So I was okay with taking him there. But
just wasn't in your plan for the second round.
No, it wasn't in the plan. But, you know, when all the pitchers got pushed up where we weren't comfortable taking any of them in the third, so, and we loved Juan Soto. So in that case, yeah, you should switch your plans if something drastic like that happens. Mm-hmm. And I do expect drastic things like that to happen this year with the starters.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's looking like it's going to be...
All the NL starters.
Starters are going to be pushed up so far this year. It's because all these guys missing time with COVID, they're going to be bumped down. You know, Price being out now, too, that's another starter off the board. I guarantee you there will be an injury or two, at least in summer training, of when guys are trying to ramp up. Please, God, let Blake Snell pretend like he's healthy until the season starts. Because I want you guys to waste your picks on him.
For me, I don't know if I'm... you say you plan out up to about round 20. I don't know.
I don't plan out until round 20, but I think that that's...
You have pools of guys.
I would say that that's where I... Yeah, I have like... I do the hitters and the starters. I make a list for each round. Once you have your draft slot, by the way. Mm-hmm. So, like, let's say you're picking first. So you know you're picking first, and then you're picking 30 and 31, and then 60 and 61, 90 and 91. So then you're looking at ADP and seeing who falls there. But make sure to adjust for the fact that pitchers are all going to be going about a round to a round and a half higher than where they are.
You can't just look at that spot. You have to look, you know, 10 picks before it.
Right.
In case you're, so you just got to be prepared for every scenario.
Right. So that's what I do. And then I say, okay, I really like the pitchers going here. I really like the hitters going at this point. I really like the late first baseman. I really like the early second baseman, stuff like that. So yeah.
And it tends to fall into place. You will find pockets where you like the starters and not the hitters.
Exactly.
And vice versa. Or, you know I'm going to have to take two of my closers in these four rounds.
And closers is the one thing where I do like getting an early closer. I'm not saying it has to be the first closer. Obviously, I don't like Hader, but I want an early closer because that way when the closer run inevitably hits, and this, by the way, especially if you're on an end, if you're drafting towards 1 or towards 15 and you're not in the middle, because if a closer run happens when there's 30 picks between your picks, you could be left with nothing by the time it gets back to you, or really bad options. So, like, let's say if you had taken Osuna in the... I'm not even looking at rounds right now, but let's say he goes in the seventh. So if you had taken Osuna in the seventh compared to if you passed on him, and by the time it gets back to you in the eighth, let's say it's all the way down to, like, the 15th closer down the board, you're going to be kicking yourself because the difference between Osuna and that closer is massive compared to the difference between whatever the position that you took there and whatever's going to be available to you at that point.
Yeah, and to compound it, you're taking two guys that you probably weren't thrilled about taking.
Right.
As opposed to having one that you really liked and then one that could hit or miss, and then, you know, you can back it up. And then you're also not going to be able to take any hitters or starters for a whole, you know, whopping 30 picks.
So this is another reason, by the way, why I hate taking utility-only players, because it limits your flexibility in the draft to where... If something falls and there's a great value at some point, and I could, like, let's say I already have two third basemen, I cannot take a late third baseman and plug him in as my utility player because I've already got that filled. So that flexibility, and it's the same thing with drafting the, if you get a closer early, you now have the flexibility to wait until whenever there's another point where closers are a good value comparatively to the other positions on your board. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So now that flexibility allows me to draft whatever the best values are that fall to me, that are values to me, like targets that I'm looking at.
Yeah, guys that you're still interested in.
Exactly.
That you would have drafted if you had to at that point.
So I hate limiting my flexibility when I don't have to.
Yeah, so that's true. I've kind of experimented with that in my draft champions. I did take Jordan Alvarez way back in December in one draft.
I remember because you were asked
shocked
me
that I did it, and I was,
well,
because you thought he was outfield.
No, yeah. So Jake, this is like way back in like November.
It was December.
December. Okay, mm-hmm. This is before I really had done any draft prep, and he was like, you know, Jordan Alvarez is on the board, and I was like, oh, he's great. Yeah, take him. I was thinking he was an outfielder, and only later did I realize, oh, he's utility only. And I'm like, way to bury the lead, dude. You didn't tell me that. Like,
I didn't know if I needed to.
Yeah.
It's not something I normally do. I guess I was, well, this was my first draft champions,
right,
which is the one that I really use to examine the player pool. You know, I hate to be flippant about $150, but it, you know, it's,
you are,
it's no, small. You, it's you, a small, small
it's,
amount.
It's very disposable for it's you. It's
disposable. Yeah. I'm a very rich Catholic school teacher. but yeah, that's kind of my mess around draft where I,
well, it's disposable after you won your money last year. Yeah, we'll say that.
Well, I guess you're right. It's a, I do have my wife that makes so much more than me, though. So,
who's also a teacher?
Yeah,
public school, though, so they pay better.
Enough to be in the Catholic school, like me. but I don't plan out my, you know, I
this is shocking to me. Mr. Fly by the seat of his pants doesn't plan out his draft.
I don't plan them out, very, very strictly, other than maybe the first five rounds, and then
this is why he's better at auctions.
And then I say, oh yeah, drafts. Oh yeah. I'm much better at auctions, but you know, I'll have a pool of two or three guys for each one of my picks, or more. You know, there's probably a couple more, and then I'll say, okay, here's the pocket where I need to take my first closer. I have these three guys that I like, and I'll, you know, as long as they're going within a round or two of that point, I'll be comfortable taking them there because, as you said, you want to get out in front of that first run.
Yeah.
You don't want to be stuck with the 14th and the 21st closer.
Right.
It's not going to go well 75% of the time when you do that.
It's just not putting it off, like, where you're like, okay, well, there's still, like, three closers before the guy that I want goes by ADP. Don't wait. Just take him. I mean, unless there's someone that you cannot pass on the, like, there's someone on the board that fell that you are just in love with, okay, take him. But other than that, don't be that person who gets stuck with a much worse closer because you didn't want to take one at that point in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Just be very conscious about and note when the first couple closers go off the board so that you can see, are they going ahead of ADP or behind ADP, and whether you think that people are going to start that run. So
very likely the former this year.
Yeah, for sure.
And I don't think there's going to be many closers falling this year.
And I always like to be in that 5 to 10 range draft position-wise because of the fact that I don't miss out on runs. And generally, there's the closer run's the biggest run, but there's also usually a catcher run,
mm-hmm.
and there's also usually steals runs where the last dregs of those stolen bases dry up. Now, that doesn't really apply to me as much because I like to draft those well-rounded hitters early who can give me steals, but those runs happen, and the more you're on those corners between 1 and 5 and, you know, 10 and 15, you're going to get caught on those runs more. So you just have to have a specific plan dependent on where you're picking in the draft. And if you're on those ends, you have to be willing to jump your guys, you know, because you're not going to pick for 30 picks after your two picks in a row.
And that translates well to auctions, too. You have to be aware of, you know, what your tiers are. You know, I plan pretty extensively the guys that I want to target at the beginning, you know, your $30 and $20 players. I know who I want to build my foundation with.
Right.
And I, you know, when I'm in an auction, I'm bidding on just about everybody. But I'm only intent on winning, you know, 15% of the guys that I'm bidding on.
He's a little more busy, I think, than you need to be, but
That's what works for me. I like to be involved in a
lot
of
players. He likes to think that everybody at the table is super interested in what everybody else is doing, and I'm pretty positive about 90% of them could give a shit. So.
I tend to think that they are.
Right.
I think they are. I think the people that play auctions are very into those nuances.
I don't think it's to the degree that you think it
is. I'm a natural haggler, so I like talking, and I like
you do.
I like bidding, so I get involved. It sometimes, you know, can almost
introvert.
Yeah, you're talking a lot more than I do.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
So I have those guys that I target in the beginning. You know, not that, you know, I can make sure that I always get them, but you always have to have a second and third backup plan. But then after that,
do you make backup plans when you're doing auctions?
I do. With my pitchers, I do.
Like in your head or like on paper?
Oh no, in my head.
Okay,
it's always
in
my head.
Of course.
Yeah, I don't. You make lists of everything.
I do. Yep.
Yeah, it's hard for me to keep that stuff organized. It's bad enough keeping ADP organized. for me. That's why I have to have a co-manager to type names into a spreadsheet, because I'm
woefully lost. We always draft with co-managers, and this year, co-drafters.
You know,
co-drafters, yes. A hard term. Tony and I are co-managers, but Jake does not have a co-manager for his teams. He just co-drafts.
Right.
So you can have someone at the table. You can have someone at the table, kind of keeping track of who's going and all that stuff, because it's a lot to keep track of, and it helps massively to have
I give props to the guys that can show up with their legal pad and, you know, their pen and be by themselves and do these drafts.
Mr. Casey Cha shows up with a piece of paper that he drafts off.
He's a lot more organized than I am. And he does a lot more drafts than I do, too.
Right, but he also drafts the same players. Like, he knows he's going to get the same – he's drafting from the same pool of, you know, 150 guys or whatever, and he knows exactly these guys are the guys I'm drafting in this range, these are the guys I'm drafting in this range. He can probably do it without the paper is what I've gathered from reading that article. So,
anything else you want to add?
No. I mean, we finally picked our spots in the NFBC main, so we're signed up.
Yeah, that's true.
Tony and I just signed up today, and you signed up your three. So.
I would stress to everyone, and I think this is very apparent, if at all possible, don't draft your main or your big money leagues until the very last possible minute, because we know that this is going to be an absolute mess for weeks.
Yeah.
Wait until you get as much news as you can. They're even running main events at 11:55 p.m., the last day that you can draft, the day before the season starts. And that's for a reason. That's because people want to be as informed as they possibly can.
Right.
I'm doing mine the last 2 days, Wednesday and the 22nd and 23rd.
We unfortunately could only do one of them that was the Tuesday before that, but it's one of the last 3 days, so I think we'll be okay.
That last Monday through Thursday, there's a ton of drafts popping off, so... And I'm sure they're going to add more.
It's interesting.
That's when everybody's
because we've got a different pool of players now, because we're not drafting out of Vegas. We're drafting online. Now, there's a lot of Vegas guys in those drafts.
Right. Not as many. But some of them are playing their normal
allotment. I've got Mike the Mouth in my league. So, you know, he's a New York guy. Wait, does he draft out of Vegas too?
Yeah, he does. Yes,
okay.
He does.
I've never been in a league with him before.
He drafts a lot of leagues.
Yeah, he does. Every option that we looked at all had Mike the Mouth in it, which is fine. I mean, I'm like, that's – we can draft with him. So, so I think that's, I was just going to also add that, you know, the one thing that our group does is we, this year, I think because of the fact that we're doing this online, we're probably going to do like a Zoom call during the draft where all four of us, me, Jake, Tony, and our other friend Marcus, who's a part of our cohort as well, the four of us will probably all be on a Zoom call and kind of discussing what we're doing during the draft for each of our drafts together, so that we can all help each other and make sure that we're all aware of what's going on and prevent Jake from making his seat of his pants mistakes.
Or
much.
When I have to run and let the dog go out.
Yeah.
You know, they can draft for me because I'll inevitably miss my pick.
Right. Or you'll get up to go take the trash out because that has to be done in the middle of your draft for some unknown reason. But, you know, just got to get up and can't sit there, so.
Or my kid will call me and I'll run to talk to him.
Yeah.
Stupid things like that.
It'll be interesting with this.
It's what I do. This is why I avoid drafting online if it's anything more than $500. But, you know, that's all I got this year.
That's all you can do this year, unfortunately.
Just, you guys got to keep me in line.
Yeah, that's going to be a job that nobody
wants.
The
times that I have drafted main events online, my boys haven't been with me because it was the 2 years that my wife was due with our children and I stayed back. So I was, you know. I had people drafting or helping me follow along, being my co-drafters that are not NFBC players. And,
how did that go?
It went okay, but, you know, when they don't know what the entire player pool is, it makes things really difficult. So, And then, you know, when I'm doing my main events, they're also drafting in Vegas. So it's not like they could be on a conference call.
Right. Yeah. Me, Tony, and Jake were all in Vegas drafting, and Jake had to stay behind.
Marcus,
not Jake. Yeah, so...
I don't, you know, what's the term from Harry Potter? Transmogrify or whatever.
Why are you asking me?
Okay,
I have no clue.
I can't
clue.
Be in two places at once.
I don't know Harry Potter, man.
Sorry.
Yeah. Anyways, so, if you've never done this before, I very much recommend getting a friend to help you out, especially a friend who's knowledgeable. I know you guys all aren't blessed like we are to have four people who are... Three of which are all in the same city and are able to get together live to do these.
But that's what Twitter is for. So
or
reach
Zoom.
Out.
You know, you can use Zoom.
Well, I mean, reaching out and making friends.
Find someone.
Yeah, find
make
somebody.
Some new friends, yeah. Just start tweeting a bunch like I do, and then you'll make some friends with
them. Slide into everybody's DMs and
send
some gratuitous pictures of yourself, and maybe you'll get a response.
All right. On that note, I think maybe that's the...
That's what you do, right?
That's a natural stopping point right there.
Okay. Well, thanks for being with us today. Please make sure you check out rotosaurus.com and see Dave's closer rankings and charts. And
I update them like several times a day, by the way, because of all this news. You can pretty much go at any time and go back an hour later and they might be different.
Dave has been living on Twitter at RunDMcD these last few days, especially.
He has been.
Check out his massive tweet strings and threads. You know, a lot of what we talked about today, he already tweeted out. By the way, I will put a link to the Casey Cha article from Guru. I think it is Fantasy Guru because it was before
they
changed
names.
Oh, you did put it on your Twitter?
Yeah.
I'll put it in the show notes as well.
Okay.
So check the show notes if you are listening to us on, you know, podcast platforms other than Anchor. Actually, yeah, it would be on Anchor as well. So scratch that. But
By the way, speaking of pods, are we on everything now? Do we get on Google?
The only thing that, we did get on Google yesterday.
Google. Okay.
The only one that we are missing right now any major one is iHeartRadio. And they told me they take 14 business days. I mean, I get that people are lighter staffed right now.
I don't know.
But that's Clear Channel. Clear Channel, you know, is notorious for horrible management practice to begin with.
I don't imagine
so.
Too many of our listeners are on iHeartRadio anyway. So.
Yeah, I mean, the majority is Apple. You know, iTunes is, you know, almost 45% of the podcast market. So we're just thankful that we're on there.
Yeah,
that's
and speaking of Apple, thank you guys so much for helping us out and rating our... We got 5-star reviews, which is awesome.
I really
appreciate you guys. And it's just nice that we can come up on searches now because... You know, when we started, it was difficult to find our pod, but
you know,
now it comes up.
If you type in Rotosaurus, it's pretty easy to find, but, you know.
Yeah, but people typing in high stakes.
Fantasy
like,
baseball doesn't
Did you
doesn't
see, like,
right
the tweet
away.
From Alex? It was like, hey, are you guys this frog?
Yeah, it had no relationship whatsoever to
high
stakes.
We're not the frog, by the way. No. We're not the frog.
Was I a frog or am I a frog?
I don't even know what it was.
Well,
it was high stake.
Yeah.
Frogs? I don't know.
It was some doctor's podcast, and it had a frog logo. But anyway,
Dave's
at RunDMcD.
Yep, that's
Check
me.
Him out there. I'm at the Dust Mite on Twitter. Thank you so much for supporting us. Those 5-star reviews are huge. You know, in our 3-show infancy, you guys are killing it for us, and we're really really appreciative.
So
of
we
that.
Plan on killing it for you until all the way through the draft season into the season.
We're very confident that you guys will find some stuff that you can take out of this podcast. We want to make sure we are focusing on a lot of the strategy that goes into, you know, making us as, you know, successful as we are in the high stakes world.
Anyone can give you rankings. Anybody can tell you, here's who I like and who I don't
this
like.
This is not football. You can't draft from a list.
We want to help you guys formulate a process of how to handle high stakes leagues. And honestly, it's applicable to any kind of league. But I know that there's a lot of you out there who are trying to work your way up to getting into the NFBC, and I think that's awesome, and I want to help you guys in any way I can.
Right.
So if you guys have any suggestions, anything you want to hear, we do have a lot of topics that we're already planning on going over, but we will have time where we can put some stuff in that you guys want to hear. So as Jake said before, slide into my DMs or his, and
the slides you do, Dave.
No, well, you know.
I am a little lonely. So
you're married,
you know.
So.
Yeah,
okay.
That's true. Yeah, no gratuitous pictures for me. Dave, you can send them to Dave's. We did say we were going to touch on some hitters today. We're going to save that for the next pod.
Yeah, we don't want to make it too long for you guys, so we'll just we'll save
that
for
over an hour at this point.
We'll save that for the next one or the one after or whatever.
You know,
it'll come in at some point.
That's kind of evergreen in this preseason or second preseason. So we'll get to that a little bit later. But thanks, guys, for listening. Keep giving us those reviews if you feel so inclined. We really appreciate that. Good talking to you today, Dave, and thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks, guys.